Welcome to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. I'm your aptly named host, Tony Martinetti. What a coincidence that I found this show. I hope you recall last week, it was Ethics Hour with Professor Doug White. Doug is the author of The Nonprofit Challenge, and we talked about ethics and the role of nonprofits in our culture. This week, save your office from a sexism scene. Policies you need in place to protect your nonprofit. HR consultant Karen Bradunas comes back to the show and explains what you need now to protect later your organization, your board, and your employees in case of a sexism or sexual harassment situation. And punch up your planned giving newsletter from savvy story style to picking perfect pictures. Claire Meyerhoff comes back to the show. She's the editorial director of The Planned Giving Company, and she shares her secrets to get your planned giving newsletters read by donors and prospects. This week on Tony's Take Two at 32 minutes after the hour, I'll talk about my TV and other radio appearances in Florida this week and give you a little glimpse of what is coming up. That's all this week, this show, Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. We now take a two-minute break. You can stand by for that. Stay with me.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Is your marriage in trouble? Are you considering divorce? Hello, I'm Lawrence Bloom, a family law attorney in New York and New Jersey. No one is happier than the day their divorce is final. My firm can help you. We take the nasty out of the divorce process and make people happy. Please call us at 212-964-3502 for a free consultation. That's Lawrence H. Bloom at 212-964-3502. We make people happy.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Welcome back to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. I'm joined now by Karen Bradunas, and we're going to be talking about saving your office from a sexism scene, the policies you need in place to protect your nonprofit and your employees. Karen is a human resources consultant working with startup organizations to protect and grow their business. Her consulting business is Karen M. Bradunas Human Resources Consulting. She has over 20 years' experience in human resources. Before consulting, she held officer positions at Gulf Insurance and Bankers Trust, which is now Deutsche Bank, and she holds the designation SPHR, Senior Professional in Human Resources, SPHR, or Sierra Papa Hotel Romeo, if you're in the military. Sierra Papa Hotel Romeo. That is a Senior Professional in Human Resources, and I'm very glad that her expertise brings her back to the show. Welcome back, Karen.
Good to be here.
Thanks very much. Glad to have you. I have a big interest in sexism lately and sex harassment issues because of a blog post that I did originally in November and then just a few weeks ago, sort of confirming what I asked in November. Does workplace sexism exist? And I got resounding yes comments, mostly from women. So I was a little embarrassed that I even bothered to ask the question initially. What are the risks to small and mid-sized nonprofits around sexism and sexual harassment?
The risk is huge. There's different kinds of harassment. There is targeted harassment, which is where it is an individual or a group of individuals has a specific person that they're not treating equally to others.
Okay, targeted, right.
If someone sues your organization for targeted harassment, it can shut down your business.
And how is that?
Well, there's damages that that you will end up paying if they can prove it, and they go through the lawsuit. I don't know the limits, but it's significant.
This is under federal law is where the lawsuit would come from, or state law, or both? Or?
Both. Okay. But harassment is looked at pretty stringently. It's a part of Title VII, which is, you know, ingrained in our culture. You know?
Title VII, just tell listeners what that is. We have jargon jail, remember. So
okay.
Title VII.
Title VII, it was started for race discrimination, but all kinds of discrimination is included in Title VII, and most recently GINA, which is genetic information. So all of this harassment really stems from Title VII, which has been around a while.
Okay, and GINA, what does GINA stand for?
Genetic Information, I think it's Notification Act, which President Bush signed in, enacted, and now some things are taking place where you can't discriminate, especially for insurance companies, based on genetic information.
Okay.
So if you have a predisposition for a certain illness, you can't be discriminated against, etc.
So this is Title VII of what? The employment law or what?
Internal Revenue Code.
Oh, the Internal Revenue Code. Really?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
Okay. All right, so
But let's take it a step further. It just makes good business sense. If you have a mission that's important, can you really say that only a certain sector of the population can help you with your mission?
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense to exclude any kind of person based on race, genetic information, sexual orientation, any of that.
Or including sex or gender.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so if there are risks, where does the risk lie? Is it with board members? Is it with the corporation, the nonprofit? Where is the risk?
It's been broadened. And especially under Sarbanes-Oxley, it rests with even the management level. If I'm a manager at an organization and an employee comes to me and says, so-and-so, and it could be a vendor, this just isn't employees. Harassment can involve vendors, consultants also. And they come to a manager and report it, that manager is obligated to either go to someone who can investigate it or investigate it themselves if they're trained to do so.
All right. Now, you mentioned Sarbanes-Oxley. Does that apply to nonprofits, though? Or are we strictly talking about Title VII for nonprofit?
I think there are some aspects of Sarbanes-Oxley that apply to all businesses.
Okay. Including, you think, the discrimination?
Yeah. I don't know if it goes as deep as discrimination testing, but there is the idea of accountability and the underlying responsibility and needing to audit. And the idea of harassment in the workplace is considered a significant piece of auditing.
Okay. And at the very least, Title VII still applies. So your point is the manager has a potential liability.
Absolutely.
Who else within the organization, including maybe the organization itself?
The organization itself.
Board members.
Board members, management, HR clearly. And you typically can't even get employment practices liability insurance, which organizations should have, unless you have a policy manual with how to report it listed in detail.
Okay. And we're going to get into what those things are that we should have in place. And you just mentioned, too, insurance and employment practices manual. So in terms of these liabilities, can they be individual? So in other words, what I mean is, can an administrator or a board member be liable as an individual?
I have, and I don't know the court precedent on this. I'd have to defer an attorney. But I, my understanding is, as HR, I can have personal liability. I've had to, in the past, fire a client because of some issues around this that put my business in jeopardy.
Okay. Well, I would think then if the HR administrator, manager has individual liability, then most likely other managers in the company. And again, you know, I keep hitting the board members, but we often forget about board members, but they are
absolutely
fiduciaries to the organization, and they have a legal duty to make sure that office is in the organization generally is operating legally within Title VII and possibly Sarbanes-Oxley. Okay, we're going to take a break, and then after that break, we will continue with Karen, and we'll start to talk about some of the details of what your organization needs to have in place, and we'll also talk about what the role of Human Resources Office is after this break. Stay with me.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Are you feeling overwhelmed in the current chaos of our changing times? A deeper understanding of authentic astrology can uncover solutions in every area of life. After all, metaphysics is just quantum physics, poetically expressed. I am Montgomery Taylor, and I offer lectures, seminars, and private consultations. For more information, contact me at Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, at rljmedia.com.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
I really need to take better care of myself. If only I had someone to help me with my lifestyle. I feel like giving up.
Is this you? Mind over matter, health and fitness can help. If you're expecting an epiphany, chances are it's not happening. Mind over matter, health and fitness can help you get back on track or start a new life in fitness. Join Joshua Margolis, fitness expert, at 212-865-9290 or visit www.mindovermatternyc.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Welcome back. My guest is Karen Berdunas, and we're talking about saving your office from sexism scene. Karen, what is the role of human resources if there is a complaint?
Human resources is responsible to investigate the complaint. Human resources may not be the only avenue, and depending on the size of the organization, you may not have a formal HR department.
Right. Many do not. Yeah.
Right. It doesn't make sense to have one until you're a certain size. But that function needs, and the individual doing that really needs to understand that there is real huge risk, especially when a complaint comes in if you choose to ignore it. Not only from the sense of a lawsuit, but just in the sense of productivity, because that really sends a strong message to staff that complaints go unheard.
Yeah, they're not working in a safe workplace, right?
It's not a safe environment, right? Yeah. It's harmful. When I write policy manuals for organizations, I really stress that you need to have in the policy manual detailed information of what the process is like and to whom the individual should go to. And I suggest that you have two avenues, either their manager or HR. If there is no HR, that they can go directly to the board or the executive director, but there needs to be two avenues. If I'm uncomfortable going to my manager to discuss this, I need another place to go.
Okay, so let's get into that then. This is the first obligation that a nonprofit has is to have an employee practices manual in place. And what else should that manual talk about in terms of sexual harassment, sexism in the workplace?
Depending on the organization, you can go into detail of what sexual harassment means.
Oh, actually define in the manual.
Inappropriate touching, and you can, you can go into giving examples. Others just state what the law is and then say, if you feel you've been a victim of harassment, these are the steps to take. I also encourage organizations to include in there that if you don't notify us of the harassment, there's nothing we can do. To understand that, because there are times that something may be going on that people don't know the detail of what it is.
Yeah. What if it's just rumors? You know, there are a lot of people talking at the water cooler about a woman who's suffering something at the hands of maybe another woman or a man.
Right. Or a vendor.
Right. You did mention that before too. But suppose there isn't a formal complaint. There's just rumors around. Everybody hears it, but nobody. The woman who's suffering this has not come forward formally. What happens then?
I encourage who's ever doing the HR function and whoever has a relationship with that individual, let's say it's a woman, that they approach her. One, because you want to make sure that you're sending a message, hey, we care if something's going on. We want you to be aware that this is being said. You don't really want a work environment where rumors are running around about people. It's not a safe environment.
It's not safe and it's not productive.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so just with a little detail, how would someone do that? Suppose it is an executive director, that there is no HR, there is no HR manager.
Right.
How would an executive director approach that person about whom the rumors are swirling? And she may very well know that the rumors are that she's being talked about, but irrespective of that, how do you make that approach and have that meeting?
I would approach someone by saying, you know, I'd like to meet with you. Go off somewhere, not in front of everyone, behind closed doors, and say, look, I'm hearing scuttlebutt about a situation, and this is what I'm hearing. I want to make you aware of it. One, to find out if it's true, to let you know if it is true, this is serious stuff. This is not behavior we approve of here, and I want to get your take on this. Is this really going on? If the individual doesn't want to share it, I, as an HR professional, would want to sort of see what's going on in the office. And I might, if the scuttlebutt is affecting a lot of staff members, call people in and say, why are you saying this?
Oh, so you're actually doing the investigation, even if the person says, I don't want to talk about it.
If it's affecting productivity, yeah. If it's going to, you know, give people a bad name, you know, if it's going to be, you know, a slander, I want to address it. And I'm, you know, depending on how much the scuttlebutt is, if it's one individual and you talk to the woman in this case who is being named as the victim, sometimes if she's sharing with one individual, that'll stop it if she doesn't want it to go further. Mm-hmm. But if it's already spread throughout the office, it's not a safe environment. If it's a false claim, then you have an issue with an employee being badmouthed. You don't want that either.
Right. That's very possible too.
You don't know.
We're talking about rumors.
You don't know.
And in our hypothetical, the woman who's supposedly the victim doesn't want to make a formal claim. Maybe there isn't anything going on. Maybe that's why she doesn't want to. But your point, then somebody's being talked about badly,
right?
As a potential perpetrator.
Now, what you just mentioned is, what if it's not happening? If it's not happening, and someone is starting this rumor or making a false claim, I recommend to employers to start to terminate the employee that's making these false claims. Because again, it's an unsafe environment where someone can falsely accuse someone else of doing something.
Okay, and you think termination is appropriate? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you've got an office where someone's being spoken against and you start an investigation, that individual is going to know it, no matter how, especially in a smaller office, no matter how discreet you are, it's uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Do you really want someone who lies to be in your office?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the bottom line.
Now it's someone you don't trust.
Right. And if you go through this and you let them stay or don't discipline them, at least in some fashion, you're essentially saying it's okay. And it's not.
Right. You are.
It's not.
And this all goes back to protecting the organization. So even if the, again, in our hypothetical, the woman is a victim, even if she doesn't want to make a claim, you still, the executive director or whoever has this HR function role still has an obligation to protect the organization.
Yes. And whether or not they make the claim, if something happens, the organization is going to suffer, even if it's just bad publicity. Employees who leave because they don't like the work environment talk about the organization to other people. Mm-hmm. So word on the street is going to get out anyways.
I'm with Karen Berdunas, HR consultant, and we're talking about protecting your office from a sexism scene, potential sexual harassment claims or sexism in the office. So Karen, besides the employee manual, and if we have time, maybe we'll come back to some of the details that should be in a manual, but we've touched on them somewhat. What else does an organization need to have in place?
There's some insurance that they should have.
What kind of insurance is that?
For some organizations, directors and officers, which may or may not apply here, but employment practices liability insurance they should have. And that is protects an organization from things such as this. And you can talk to a broker about it. There's specialized brokers in this area that specialize in it, and there's certain, you know, claims. It's very specialized insurance. You cannot typically get it without having an employee manual in place.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you mentioned that earlier.
Yeah, because they won't underwrite it. It's because without a manual, they don't know what you're doing. So how do you want to underwrite something where we don't know what your employment practices are?
Right, you can't even assess the risk, so
right.
You can't assess a premium, and so they
can't
take
underwrite
the insurance.
It.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, would an insurance company of that type that has that employment practices liability insurance typically help the organization construct the nonprofit? I mean, construct the employee manual, or would they have a template, or would you not expect that really?
I have not seen them have it.
Okay.
There may be some out there that do. You can get boilerplate manuals from some accountants have them. I don't know if they're the most current, and certainly attorneys have them.
Okay.
I work with organizations who want to customize it, and the ones you get from attorneys are oftentimes legalese, and often organizations say that doesn't really feel like our organization, so we'll customize it because it is part of the orientation process. A manual sort of gets an employee to get a sense of what the organization is like.
Okay.
And in some cases, I will write manager's manuals based on the employee manual.
Oh, that's interesting. So that's something else that should be in place?
Well, it doesn't have to be in place. But if you have an organization where you want to ensure that there's consistency for all managers, you'd like a document for them to refer to so that they know. They have the policy manual. They know what the policy is, but how do they enforce it? You know, do they have forms they have to use for corrective disciplinary action? Is there a template? Where are these forms? How do you do this? You know, when are things due? Sort of a guidebook for managers. I create that. It cuts down on training time, and it also ensures some consistency across the organization.
Okay, so sort of does it also, that manager's manual include sort of interpretation of the policy?
Yeah.
And as well as you're describing the process for carrying out the policies
right.
in the employee manual.
So it'll typically say, here's the policy. You know, we expect you to be on time. I'll give a real, you know, we expect you to be on time. So it'll say in the manager's manual, employees, you know, if an employee is consistently late 15 minutes or more for X number of days, they really should have a verbal warning or a written warning, and it goes through that step. So just to make sure that, you know, you don't have one manager putting someone on written warning for one, you know, 1 minute after the hour and another, you know, never.
Yeah, okay, consistency,
right.
Fairness. And, of course, that would relate to claims of sexual harassment as well.
Exactly. And the more consistent and the more you follow your policy manual and understand when someone is claiming a harassment suit, they're going into court with that manual. It's a legal document.
Oh, talk a little about that.
The employee manual is the manual that goes to court. That talks about how you do what you do at your organization. So if an employee is suing you because you're not you're not treating them the same as everyone else. Mm-hmm. That's what they're going to court with. Not what you said, although that is part of it, but what the legal document is, you know, when an employee says, I got fired for poor performance, and they say, but here are all my performance reviews, they all say I'm an excellent employee. There's a disconnect.
So same between the practice and the manual.
Exactly.
So, okay. Very interesting.
I sent an email that I was being harassed by this person. Here's a manual that says that they will investigate it and they'll get back to me. Nobody got back to me. Mm. It was never investigated. I also have a friend who complained about the same individual. I mean, it could become then a class action.
Okay. So should these manuals, so we're talking about the employment practices manual and maybe the manager's manual.
Yeah.
Those should be approved by the board then?
A lot of boards do look at them, yeah. When I'm working with organizations, I typically work with the executive director level and maybe the top manager level. Mm-hmm. And then it's given to the board for approval.
Okay. Because, as you said, it could end up as evidence in court.
Yeah.
All right. All right. So the manuals, the employment practices liability insurance. What about training around these? Is that an element of
yeah, you have
what
to
should
do,
be included?
You have to do sexual harassment avoidance training, not sexual harassment training, like most people say.
Thank you. Yeah.
And that should be done at least annually.
And that is for all employees?
All employees. And you need them to sign a document that they went.
And what are the elements of that training?
It's to talk about what sexual harassment is. It's to talk about if you feel you're a victim of sexual harassment, what to do in the process so that everyone knows and everyone has a heightened awareness of it. Now, some people will call it diversity training as well, you know, and they'll encompass it in diversity training. Depending on the organization, how they feel about using the term sexual harassment avoidance. But it does need to happen. I've heard some anecdotal stories of organizations that have had their HR person give the training, and typically the person who is making fun during the meeting is the perpetrator.
Oh, well, now, what, that shouldn't even be tolerated.
No.
I mean, if we're in a meeting to talk about sexual harassment avoidance and then people are making off-color jokes.
It's difficult when it's the executive director, though.
Executive director making the jokes, you mean?
Yeah.
You've seen that?
I've heard it secondhand. I wasn't there. Because if I was there, it would have.
What would you do in that? Okay, so if you were the HR consultant, I'm going to put you on the spot.
Yep.
You're the HR consultant in an organization. You're doing sexual harassment training, your annual training. And the executive director of the organization is making some kind of off-color jokes about women. What would you do in that case?
I would first say, look, this is really serious, and do you understand the implications to this organization?
You're doing this, I'm sorry, in the meeting, right?
You're
doing it in public.
Yep.
Okay. You're stopping the meeting. Okay, go ahead. Just wanted to get the setting.
And because if it's important to really set the tone that, hey, HR takes this seriously. People need to know they can come to work and be safe. And so I will address it that way. And if that doesn't, that doesn't stop, I'll ask the person to come out. And if that person I know of is suspected of doing things, I may directly talk to them about it and say, you may be an offender of this. This is a big deal.
Yeah. That includes, we're talking about the executive director.
Yeah, I mean, anybody.
Because the risk runs to the organization, right?
Yeah.
I mean, your job is to protect the organization. The person who has the HR role, their job is to protect the organization.
Right.
Not the executive director.
Right.
Okay.
And that means if you're not going to talk to me about it, I'm going to have to fire you as a client and notify the chairman of the board.
I understand. Okay. We have just a minute left.
Okay.
Very serious stuff. What about orientation for new employees? Can you say something about that in just a minute or so?
Sure. The policy manual is a really important part of orientation because you're telling everyone these are the rules we play by as an organization. And that's why you want your manual to really reflect who you are and what you're doing, and to be written in a way that reflects your culture. They need to feel that it's a tool that they can use to go to. I suggest that people, when they give orientations, that they also have time to meet with various departments.
We have to leave it there, Karen. Very good advice. Karen M. Berdunis, Human Resources Consulting is her company. Her name is Karen Bradunas, and she is an HR consultant, and the subject has been sexism and sexual harassment in the workplace. Karen, thank you very much for coming back to the studio.
Thank you.
It's 30 minutes after, and we're going to take about a two-minute break, and when we return, it's Tony's Take Two, and then my guest, Claire Meyerhoff, talking about punching up your planned giving newsletter after this break.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
This is Tony Martinetti, the aptly named host of Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. Big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Technology, fundraising, compliance, social media. Small and medium nonprofits have needs in all these areas. My guests are expert in all these areas and more. Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio, Fridays, 1 to 2 Eastern on Talking Alternative Broadcasting.
Do you want to enhance your company's web presence with an eye-catching and unique website design? Would you like to incorporate professional video marketing or mobile marketing into your organization's marketing campaign? Mission 101 Media offers a unique marketing experience that will set you apart from your competitors, magnify your brand exposure, and enhance your current marketing efforts. Their services include video production and editing, web design, graphic design, photography, social media management, and now introducing mobile marketing. Their motto is, we do whatever it takes to make our clients happy. Contact them today at mission101media.com.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Welcome back to Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. It's 32 minutes after the hour, which means it's time for Tony's Take Two. I do a lot of speaking and training, and I can speak at your conference or train your office fundraisers on either planned giving or charity registration compliance. This week alone, I was at the Association of Fundraising Professionals in Western Massachusetts talking about demystifying charity registration for them. Then I talked about planned giving on the Michael Chapman Giving Show, which is a radio show down in South Beach, Miami, Florida. And then I did more planned giving, talking on a TV show in Naples, Florida, Wall Street Wrap Up. In the coming weeks, I'm going to be at Women in Development at Mercer County, New Jersey. That's on January 26th, demystifying planned giving for them. And then on February 3rd, I'm a keynote dinner speaker at a meeting on Staten Island in New York. So I've been busy and keeping busy. And if you'd like me to talk about joining your meeting or conference, then you can email me from my blog, which is mpgadv.com. And that is Tony's Take Two for Friday, January 21st. Sam, do we have Claire Meyerhoff on the phone? We do? Okay. I'm joined now by Claire Meyerhoff. We're going to be talking about punching up your planned giving newsletter from savvy story style to picking perfect pictures. Claire is the editorial director of the Planned Giving Company, and she's here to share secrets to get your planned giving newsletters read. As I said, she's editorial director for the Planned Giving Company. That company produces magazine-style newsletters for major nonprofit organizations. So there's our mission, big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. She's also the creative producer for this show, and I'm very glad that her expertise brings her back to the show. Welcome back, Claire.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. What's the problem with planned giving newsletters? How come a lot of them go unread?
Well, there are some problems with planned giving newsletters, but there's some good news that I just heard about planned giving newsletters, and this was an anecdotal bit of information. I was recently talking to a colleague, and he said that he had gone to visit a prospective donor that he'd known for a long time, and the donor took out a file, and he had all his nice little information in there, his own financial information, but he also had the last 10 or so planned giving newsletters from his institution.
That's great.
That he had saved, and he had them all neatly in that folder. And I just heard that about a month ago, and that has really kind of changed the way that I think about planned giving newsletters in a way. And what it makes me think is that we need to give people something that they're willing to save.
Yeah, I think that's a big win. That that story is a home run. If people will save those for when they go to their estate planning attorney to revise their will or prepare their will, and they have a stack of these, that's a home run, I think, for the organization, because the person has the organization in mind when they go to revise or prepare their first will.
That's true. And so often we like to just, you know, do stories or write little nice things, and that's what we're so focused on. But at the end of the day, it really is the planned giving content that the person, that's the reason that they saved the newsletter. So I think that the key is really combining really cool, neat stuff, donor profiles, you know, jazzy, snazzy things, but also keep in mind that you need to provide some of that real content, like a little, you know, gift annuity rate chart and definitely your bequest language and those kind of things.
Okay, and we're going to get into your tips. Who's the audience for planned giving newsletters? Who are we writing for?
Well, you have to think about your audience, so that's different whichever organization you're for, and you have to know your donors. It's just like anything else. So if you're the planned giving person or the development person or even the executive director or communications director at your organization, you have to be thinking about, well, who is getting this newsletter at my organization? So you know who that person is, who you're sending it to. You might want to do a targeted planned giving newsletter. Maybe your donors that are a little bit older, your loyal donors, people that have been giving consistently for 10 or 15 years at the planned giving company. Sam Caldwell, who's been with the company, he started the company a long time ago, and he says that it's your loyal donors that are your best planned giving prospects, not necessarily your high-end donors. It's your people that have been giving consistently, even if it's $50 a year, for more than 12 or 15 years. It's those people that are most likely to do a planned gift. So
yes.
Think about those people, and that's the audience that you're writing to.
I'm always stressing that in seminars, that the best planned giving prospects are those who are consistent long-term donors, and exactly as you said, ignoring the size of those gifts. But if somebody's been giving for, say, 18 of the past 20 years, and some of the nonprofits that I work with have been around for much longer than that, so maybe 25 or 27 of the past 30 years, even if it's just $10 or $15 a year, they're always planning for you, and that makes them a terrific planned gift prospect.
Right. It shows a couple of things. It shows, one, that they love your organization and they continue to care about your mission, but two, that they're a certain kind of a person, that they're organized. They do the same things every single year. They're probably more organized people, which means they're more likely to have a will or to be really interested in their, you know, financial planning.
And they're so organized that every time a plan giving newsletter comes, they put it in their file.
Right.
So
let's think that that's our typical person,
right,
that we're writing for.
All right, so let's talk about some of your tips for punching up planned giving newsletters. What do you want to start with?
Well, I'd like to start with the stories. So it's something I call the savvy story style.
Okay.
So instead of doing your typical donor profile where it's what we call gushing flattery, where you just say, oh, they're on the board of this, and they're the head of this, and they love this, and they're so wonderful in the community. Forget all that. We assume that that's who this person is. Find that real nugget of information, the real reason that they give to the organization, and that might just be a little, you know, funny little story. And then something that you can do is, instead of doing the paragraph format, try something else. Think about the magazines that you read and how you see interviews with people, the ones you read, and say a celebrity magazine where it's like, you know, five questions for Nicole Kidman.
Yes, a lot of them are Q&A format, right?
Yeah, Q&A format, and that's more fun to do. It's easy to do, and think about this. It's easier for the donor. You don't have to, like, take up all of the donor's time, like, getting all this information. You just get, you know, a few questions and get the answer to that, and it can be more fun, and it's so much more readable for your audience.
Okay. What else do you have for us?
Well, the key to the question style is in that last question. So say your first questions are like, yeah, how did you get involved with the organization? And what's your favorite thing about the organization? And what's the best thing that we do? Or something like that. Your last question should always be, what would you hope to see the future for our organization? What do you hope to see Habitat for Humanity doing in the future? And that gives the person the chance to say what they dream about the future for your organization, and then you tie it into the planned gift.
All right, I was just going to say, that leads naturally to the planned gift, which is almost always cash to the organization in the future.
Right. So the answer might be, I'd love to see us double the number of houses we build, and that's one reason I decided to put Habitat for Humanity in my will. And then after that, that's where you anchor your interview. The interview's, you know, on the top, and it looks nice. It's all laid out well. And then you skip a couple of spaces, and you anchor it with that, you know, that hard information that you want people to have. It's the call to action. If you would like to put us in your will, here's how you do it. It's really easy. Here's our bequest language. And then you also want to encourage the person to get in touch with you, the development director or the plan giving director, because that's what's so important. So you give them a reason to call. So you give them the outright bequest language in the article, and then you encourage them to call or email for alternative language, like a fraction of the estate's residual, or any other reason you can think of for
okay.
them to actually call or email you at your office.
Now, let's define a few of these. Now, you know, we have Jargon Jail on Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. So let's just go into a little detail. Now, the outright bequest, what do you mean by that?
Well, an outright bequest is I bequeath to the university a gift of $10,000.
Okay. And you contrasted that with the residual bequest.
A residual bequest is you could after you have made provisions for everyone in your family and your friends and your you know, dog sitter, then you can leave the residual, a percentage of the residual. So you could say, I leave 10% of the residual of my estate, or you could leave the entire residual of your estate.
I see, right. And the residual is what's left after the after taxes and the death expenses and all the outright bequests have been paid. Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
You're the expert, Tony.
Well, you're on probation from Jargon Jail. Careful. You're walking a fine line. Okay. What about pictures? Do you have some advice about making those pictures more interesting?
Yeah, the photos are definitely the sticking point when you're putting together a planned giving newsletter. Often it's an afterthought. You have this great story, you have it in there, and at the end you go, oh, we need a picture of the donor. And then you might call the donor, and they send you some really lame snapshot that's not high resolution. And when you do things in print, you should really have as high resolution photograph as possible. So to stay out of Jargon Jail, high resolution is the number of pixels, and that's pretty much the image that comes straight out of your digital camera onto your computer before you compress it, say, to put on the web or send to your friend in an email. So it's more of that original big photograph for you to work with. So that's important, is to get a nice, clear photo. So if you don't have that great photo, your best case scenario would be that when someone went on a Habitat for Humanity build, their nephew, who's an art student, came along and took pictures for his portfolio, and he has them. Then you can use that in your newsletter, give him a credit. That's your slam dunk. That's the best thing possible.
Because it's casual, right?
And the donor has no great photograph. This is a good opportunity to actually spend some face time with that wonderful person that left your organization in their will. So use this opportunity. Hey, you know, I need to take a picture or feature you. We'd love to have a great photograph. Can I come over? Can I come over with our young staff member who's a great photographer? And spend a little time with them. So that's something to really think about. That's an opportunity, as opposed to something that's a problem. That's like, oh, we don't have a photograph. What a pain in the neck. And what I find a lot with people in organizations is things like photography, writing for the web. People treat these things like a chore because it's not what they do, and they think it's complicated. So I would advise people to really get those skills. If you're not a great photographer, take a little class. Ask a friend who's a photographer, you know, buy a little bit better camera if your organization doesn't have one. and make that effort, because you can do so much with photographs. You can, with photographs, you can take a picture and send it as a thank you note to someone. Take that photo, print it out, put it in a card, write a thank you note. So you can do a lot with photographs. But for your organization, for this newsletter, you really want that good photograph. So I have a couple of tips about taking photographs if you get to the donor's house. And one of them is, you know, get as close as you can to the subject. Don't stand way, way back. Get closer up.
Okay.
Have them actually do something. So if you're Habitat for Humanity, have the person stand there with a hammer. They're just holding the hammer. That's a cool photo. It's not fake because, you know, they're standing in their front yard with a hammer. Have them have some sort of a prop or doing something. And then, like I said, get close up and make sure that the light is right on them. The light should be right on their face and their eyes. That's the main thing. If you get that right, you're in good shape. And then my last tip is shoot from above. So if you're shorter than your subject, hold your camera up higher and tilt it down a little bit, and you can see it in the viewfinder. And that is a much more flattering way to take a photo. Just trust me on this.
Oh, excellent.
It's the really most flattering way to take a photograph of someone.
Okay.
So that's the little short version of the, you know, how to take a picture.
Okay, and even if you're shorter, you stand up on a little stepladder or a chair or something.
Exactly, stand up on a little stepladder or something like that.
Okay, we have just a minute before a break, Claire. Can you get another tip in the next minute?
I can. Snappy, snazzy headlines, very important. That's a real waste of newsletter real estate. Our dull headlines like donor profile. I would like to put that in jargon jail. The term donor.
Well, we're expanding. We have to be careful about our criminal code here. We can't expand the criminal code the way some people might like to. I'm not sure that qualifies. But
okay,
tell us what the trouble is with donor profile.
It's on parole. Donor profile.
All right. Parole.
The problem with donor profile, it's generic. It's like sitting down to watch the television show 30 Rock, and an announcer comes on and says, "Comedy television show." That's inside jargon that we use. We'll say, "Hey, Tony, what are we going to do for donor profile this month?"
Yeah.
That's shorthand. It's not a headline. Find something about the interview and put that in the headline.
Okay. We are going to take a three-minute break. My guest is Claire Meyerhoff, and we're talking about punching up your plan giving newsletter. Three-minute break. You can sit through a three-minute break. Come on. At the end of that, it's Claire Meyerhoff. Of course you can sit through it. Stay with us.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Are you stuck in your business or career? Trying to take your business to the next level and it keeps hitting a wall? This is Sam Leibowitz, the Conscious Consultant. I will help you get to the root cause of your abundance issues and help move you forward in your life. Call me now and let's create the future you dream of. 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. The Conscious Consultant, helping conscious people be better business people.
I really need to take better care of myself. If only I had someone to help me with my lifestyle. I feel like giving up.
Is this you? Mind over matter, health and fitness can help. If you're expecting an epiphany, chances are it's not happening. Mind over matter, health and fitness can help you get back on track or start a new life in fitness. Join Joshua Margolis, fitness expert, at 212-865-9290 or visit www.mindovermatternyc.com.
Do you want to enhance your company's web presence with an eye-catching and unique website design? Would you like to incorporate professional video marketing or mobile marketing into your organization's marketing campaign? Mission 101 Media offers a unique marketing experience that will set you apart from your competitors, magnify your brand exposure, and enhance your current marketing efforts. Their services include video production and editing, web design, graphic design, photography, social media management, and now introducing mobile marketing. Their motto is, we do whatever it takes to make our clients happy. Contact them today at mission101media.com.
TalkingAlternative.com.
Welcome back. I'm with Claire Meyerhoff. As I promised, I told you she'd come back. Claire, you're still there, right?
I'm here.
Okay, what else do you have for us? Punching up our plan giving newsletters. We want donors to actually read these things. How do we do it?
Well, we make it more like the things that they're used to reading instead of things that look like a church newsletter from the 50s. So that's a key point, is that what are people reading these days? What are they used to looking at? More and more people are online, even your older donors. They're online. They're reading, you know, punchy, nifty things online. So if they're used to reading Huffington Post or USA Today online, they're used to more punchy writing, punchy layout, just a different look than this old-fashioned sort of newsletter look. So really think about your style of your newsletter. Try to get more white space in there, meaning leave more space around things. You don't have to crowd it with content. And that's usually a challenge because we do have a lot of great things to tell people, right? We want to get it all in there. So try as best you can to leave more white space. So pay much more attention to your layout. When you're flipping through a magazine, your favorite, you know, magazine that you like to read on your off time, and you see a layout that looks good, rip it out and think, well, why do I like that? And then try to duplicate that in your plan giving newsletter. It's not hard to think about that stuff a little bit more.
Would one element of that be keeping the articles to a certain length?
Yeah, I think there's no specific word count for
okay.
articles.
Yeah,
it's more about how it looks and what you're trying to get across. But definitely keep your articles to a couple hundred words or less. You can say a lot in 50 words, believe it or not. Photos tell a great story for the idea that you're trying to get across. Plan giving is very, very simple, really. It's just about leaving a legacy, leaving this gift for the organization. It's something that comes from the heart. It's not complicated. It's not about, doing anything that's really complicated. It's a simple, simple thing when you think about it. Anybody can do that. And so you just want to get to the heart of the matter, why people want to leave gifts. So use those little donor stories. And use little examples of things. So if you're an organization that recently had a real estate gift, someone left you a farm, explain that to your donors. That's really interesting. That's inside information to them and cool. So write about that, about how that worked, that you got this farm and it was valuable to you for this reason, and either you sold it and you used the money to put up a new community center or whatever. Tell people the nitty-gritty details of that cool gift. So if you've had interesting planned gifts and you would like more of them, talk about them.
We have just about 2 minutes left, Claire. You mentioned something. You said this is all, you know, at its roots, it's all very simple. But planned giving does have a technical side. I mean, so should we spend newsletter landscape explaining the details of the charitable remainder unit trust with makeup provision?
Well, I think that you should spend a little time with the technical part for the things that you would like your donors to do. So if you do have a gift annuity that you have to offer and you would like people to do that, then talk about it a little bit. And you can do that in a simple way. Just talk about the benefits of the gift. So you could say, check out our charitable gift annuity and check a few things off your to-do list. And then under, to-do, like it's a list, increase my retirement income, decrease my taxes now, and give back to Habitat for Humanity. And that sort of tells people in a nutshell what it does. And then just, put a little rate chart down there that you get from the person that provides you the rate chart. So a sample rate chart for a $10,000 gift annuity for someone that's age 60. And then you want a little disclaimer language under there. So you briefly explain how it works, but you don't have to get into a lot of details because they're not going to fill out something below that and send it in and do it. It's not that kind of a gift. So you don't have to tell them every single thing. Just tell them the benefits, tell them who's eligible, and how they would go about doing it. and just give them that information.
Claire, in just the 30 seconds we have left, it sounds like, you know, going back to your original advice, you're not writing a newsletter for CPAs and estate planning attorneys. This does not need to be a technical explanation.
No, you're writing for your loyal donors, and keep in mind that you want them to hang on to this. You want them to read it and to think about it and go, wow, that's interesting, and maybe tuck it away somewhere instead of throwing it out, because that's how planned gifts get made. Over the years, people think about it. It's in the back of their mind. Then something happens in their life, a change, where they think, oh, I need to really get on this. I need to really work on my estate plans and do these kinds of things. And then they'll have you in mind. You've already offered them some solutions, and hopefully they'll give you a call and act on it.
Claire, thank you very much.
Thanks, Tony.
My guest has been Claire Meyerhoff. She's editorial director of the Planned Giving Company, and we're grateful for her advice about punching up your Planned Giving newsletter. Also want to thank my first guest, was Karen Berdunas, HR consultant, talking about sexism and protecting your nonprofit from those kinds of claims. Next week, our I'm Looking series continues. We're going to check in with our job seeker, Leonora, and recruiter, Paula Marks. We've been checking in with them once a month. We're going to see how Leonora's job search is going on I'm Looking. And also, we'll be joined by Scott Kegler, the show's tech contributor, and he'll have the latest software reviews. That's next week. You can keep up with what's coming up. Sign up for our insider email alerts on the Facebook page. And while you're there, click the like button. Become a fan of the show. Of course, that's on Facebook.com, Tony Martinetti, Nonprofit Radio. The creative producer of our show is Claire Meyerhoff. Line producer is Sam Leibowitz. He's also the owner of Talking Alternative Broadcasting. And our social media is by Regina Walton of Organic Social Media. This is Tony Martinetti, Nonprofit Radio, always having in mind big nonprofit ideas for the other 95%. Join me next Friday, right here on Talking Alternative Broadcasting at talkingalternative.com, 1 p.m. next Friday.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you suffering from aches and pains? Has traditional medicine let you down? Are you tired of taking toxic medications? Then come to the Double Diamond Wellness Center and learn how our natural methods can help you to heal. Call us now at 212-721-8183. That's 212-721-8183. Or find us on the web at www.doublediamondwellness.com. We look forward to serving you.
Are you feeling overwhelmed in the current chaos of our changing times? A deeper understanding of authentic astrology can uncover solutions in every area of life. After all, metaphysics is just quantum physics, poetically expressed. I am Montgomery Taylor, and I offer lectures, seminars, and private consultations. For more information, contact me at Monty, M-O-N-T-Y, at rljmedia.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Is your marriage in trouble? Are you considering divorce? Hello, I'm Lawrence Bloom, a family law attorney in New York and New Jersey. No one is happier than the day their divorce is final. My firm can help you. We take the nasty out of the divorce process and make people happy. Please call us at 212-964-3502 for a free consultation. That's Lawrence H. Bloom at 212-964-3502. We make people happy.
I really need to take better care of myself. If only I had someone to help me with my lifestyle. I feel like giving up.
Is this you? Mind Over Matter Health and Fitness can help. If you're expecting an epiphany, chances are it's not happening. Mind Over Matter Health and Fitness can help you get back on track or start a new life in fitness. Join Joshua Margolis, fitness expert, at 212-865-9290 or visit www.mindovermatternyc.com.
TalkingAlternative.com.